Now, we will be taking a look at that verdict with David Schultz, professor of political science and law at Hamline University and professor of law at the University of Minnesota. You can join in with your reactions at 800-642-1234 to the guilty verdicts in all three charges: second-degree unintentional murder, third-degree murder, and second-degree manslaughter. Join in with your reactions, what you're hoping may come out of all of this, at 800-642-1234, or email ideas@wpr.org. David Schultz is with us now. David, welcome back to the show.
Thank you very much for having me again.
I know you've been watching this trial closely. We've talked to you about it in the past. Your reactions, first of all, to the verdict, guilty on all three charges.
Well, on one level, not surprised at all. I think the prosecution put up an exceedingly good case. And if we, as we were watching the trial, and what many of us were surprised by was what seemed to be the relative both brevity and weakness of the defense case last week. And I think it spoke to the fact that A, the prosecution had put on a fairly overwhelming case, and B, as we're seeing as a result of the verdict today, the defense didn't have a really strong argument. At the end of the day, when the prosecution said, you know, believe what you see, believe that 9-minute and 29-second video and watch that. I think at the end of the day, in part, the jurors believed it, and the prosecution put up the supporting evidence to reinforce what their senses, what their intuitions were telling them. So on that level, we sort of had a hint going into it that just by looking at the number of witnesses and how many of us assessed prosecution versus defense case, it was going to be going in the direction of the prosecution. Wasn't sure if it was going to be guilty on all three counts, but not a surprising verdict.
And David, the timing here, when the announcement came out that the jury had reached a verdict, it would be announced already this afternoon. Did that, I know we can't predict things with 100% certainty, but did that tip your hand that if they're going to do something quickly, it was probably going to involve guilty verdicts?
Yeah, it did, actually. I originally thought that the jury would spend all day today reviewing the charges, debating and so forth, and that we wouldn't see a verdict at least until tomorrow on Wednesday. The fact that when I heard it, approximately 2 o'clock today that they were in, I thought, there's no way this was going to be an acquittal. I mean, after they rested yesterday, I thought acquittal was highly unlikely. And again, after 11 hours of deliberation, it's like, yes, this is a good sign for the prosecution. Again, not realizing how good of a sign it was, but should have thought about it, is that I couldn't have imagined a situation where they said after 11 hours, we're done. We've reached guilty on, let's say, one, not guilty on two others. In some sense, this makes a lot of sense in terms of how it came in.
This isn't it. As we heard the judge talking after dismissing the jury, the guilty verdicts are in. Sentencing still remains to happen. Can you talk, David, about that process now?
Well, Minnesota has sentencing guidelines in which we have a complex sentencing grid in which there's sort of presumptive sentences that somebody will get for each of the crimes here. You heard the judge mention something about sort of Blakely hearings and so forth. And what happens now is that there'll have to be some additional information that will be coming in from both sides regarding why perhaps the presumptive guidelines for sentencing should either be upwardly departed or departed downwardly. So that's going to have to be considered, as well as what's PSI, which is called the pre-sentencing investigation, in terms of what the final recommendations are. And so we're still looking at about 2 months out, if I remember what the judge said here, in terms of what's going to happen next. So we have Derek Chauvin, who will be incarcerated at this point, and you know, they let him away in handcuffs at this point, but we still have to find out the sentencing. Now, in case people are wondering here, he's been convicted of three different charges. The presumption in Minnesota is that generally they would be serving concurrent sentences, even though convicted of all three, but the law does allow for the judge to say that these could be consecutive sentences. And I think that's going to be part of the discussion in terms of the PSI, the pre-sentencing investigation, regarding whether the judge should say that given the factors in the crime, should there be, you know, again, consecutive or concurrent sentences.
David, what is the avenue for appeal? Is there an appeal in a case like this?
Well, there is. I'm pretty convinced that there's going to be an appeal. In fact, I will say I'm 100% convinced there's going to be an appeal. And the defense has laid the groundwork for it several times. It has said, for example, several weeks ago during jury deliberation, when Minneapolis announced that it was settling with the George Floyd family, they asked for a mistrial. They asked for a postponement of the case. They asked for a change of venue. They talked about that after Dante Wright, you know, who was another person killed by a police officer very close to here. They asked for, again, a sequestering of the jury. And then Maxine Waters' comments yesterday. Again, there was a request for a mistrial. So I think what the defense is going to argue, on top of perhaps let's say, trial errors, which we have yet to see what they're going to identify, I think they're going to argue that the atmosphere surrounding the trial was such that it was impossible to render a fair verdict.
Who would that go to then? What is the next court of appeal resort here?
The next will be the Minnesota Court of Appeals. And just to give you some timeline here, we had another case involving Mohammed Noor, who was another police officer convicted of killing somebody. By the time he was convicted, and then we had a court of appeals decision, it took approximately 2 years. So we could very well be looking at a situation here before the court of appeals in Minnesota renders a verdict. It could be a couple of years. The Mohammed Noor case also is being appealed to the Supreme Court, which adds several more months to it. So it's conceivable, you know, that we do not have a final verdict within the Minnesota court system for 2 to 3 years. And given how high profile of a case this is, I would not be surprised if the defense asks for, if they lose all the way up, I wouldn't be surprised for them to ask for the U.S. Supreme Court to hear the case. If that were to happen, we could be having this conversation 3 or more years out regarding the final disposition regarding appeals in the Derek Chauvin case.
So we continue our conversation about the jury verdict in the case against former Minneapolis police officer Derek Chauvin. He was found guilty on all three charges in the death of George Floyd. Our guest is David Schultz, professor of political science and law at Hamline University and professor of law at the University of Minnesota. And this is your chance to join in with your reactions to those verdicts, your questions about how the system worked here, your hopes, fears of what this might mean moving forward. You could join in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234, or email ideas at WPR.org. We'll have special coverage tonight, by the way, at 8 o'clock from NPR with more on the verdicts today. And again, you can join in now at 800-642-1234. David, the prosecution was very careful to say policing is not on trial here. Derek Chauvin is on trial here. That said, does this change anything? Does this send a message when it comes to American policing?
Well, I think had we had acquittal verdicts, it clearly would have been a setback in terms of, let us say, the issue of race relations, police reform in the United States. With the guilty verdicts across all three, it certainly moves us forward. But at the end of the day, though, remember, it still is on one level, only one verdict regarding one police officer, and a lot more has to be done. But it certainly sends, I think, a signal. Now, the question becomes at this point, how do police departments across the United States respond to this? Do they now change more of their protocols or procedures? I don't know. What's interesting in this case here, remember, is that the police chief, Chief Arredondo, testified against his own officer. As far as we can tell, that's the first time in American history that's happened. And the reason why that's important, it suggests that perhaps the police are not standing united. But at the same time, what this is suggesting is that the police were saying, well, Derek Chauvin is an outlier. He is not what represents the normal, reasonable course of policing. And the reason why I mention that is that if he's treated as the outlier, then perhaps it doesn't necessarily mean that we're going to see significant police reform in the United States. Instead, it's what? The system worked. policing generally works. We had one bad apple. We got rid of that bad apple. But clearly, this creates the conditions that make it possible, perhaps, to bring about further reforms. It all depends on, I think, in the next few days, how this is interpreted, this verdict. Is it just what? A verdict about one person, and therefore that's the extent of what we need to do because the system worked? Or is it uncovering a broader systemic problem that needs to be addressed?
Let's bring on a caller now at 800-642-1234. John is with us in La Crosse. John, hi.
Hello.
Oh, what did you want to bring up, John?
Yeah, I was just wondering what kind of a sentencing is Chauvin looking at, and whatever happened to the other officers that were involved?
John, great questions. First of all, the length, potential length of sentences for Derek Chauvin, and then the other officers on the scene at the death of George Floyd, David.
So let's do the latter question first. The other three officers are scheduled for trials that begin sometime in August. And I think this verdict has a big impact upon what happens with that trial, because had Derek Chauvin been found innocent, I think it would have been harder to find them guilty, because they're more or less, let's say, aiding and abetting. I should also point out, because he was found guilty, I suspect the defense is going to be partly that, guess what? They're not guilty because somebody else was found guilty. So we'll be curious to see how this plays out. Okay, the various charges here now, we've got three different indictments, or rather, I guess say, we've got three different charges here. And depending on how the judge operates here, we're going to get a variety of possibilities here, where what we have is, for example, the second degree murder case, he faces potentially up to 40 years in jail. For the manslaughter case, he faces up to, I'm just checking here, 10 years. And for the third degree murder, he faces up to 25 years. Now, Minnesota law, there's a presumption here of concurrent sentences as opposed to consecutive. But one of the things that's going to be discussed over the next few days is whether or not we're going to go with the presumptive sentences, which are in our sentencing guidelines. Are we going to go with, for example, again, concurrent versus consecutive? Are there any aggravating factors that suggest that he should get more time? And so this is what's going to be addressed in the next few weeks. But at this point, we could say that that under the second degree statute, which says for imprisonment for not more than 40 years, the presumption at that presumptive sentence there is 150 months or 12 and a half years.
Thanks for the call, John. We'll go to Deborah now, calling from La Crosse. Deborah, hi.
Hi. I'm actually a graduate of a law school at the U of M, but I'm trying to remember, cannot the U.S. Department of Justice file civil rights charges against Chauvin and that way get around double jeopardy?
Good question.
Yes.
David, thanks for that call. Thanks for that call, Deborah. David.
Yes, they can at this point. Double jeopardy only applies to trying the person twice in the same jurisdiction. The Supreme Court has ruled that federal versus state charges are different. And yes, my understanding is the Biden administration has been actively looking at now bringing civil rights charges against Derek Chauvin, and that could very well occur too. So he could be facing another trial. And then remember, of course, that the city of Minneapolis has already reached a settlement with the George Floyd family for $27 million payout. So there is multiple punishments that are being inflicted. But your basic question is correct here, is that the U.S. Department of Justice, DOJ, can come in with a civil rights violation now.
Thanks for that call, Deborah. Time for another caller. Bob is with us in Chippewa Falls. Bob, hello.
Hello. Your guest mentioned that people may try to say that Chauvin was an outlier, and I really think that's flawed. I think Chauvin's conduct is not an outlier, because the case with that National Guard's lieutenant, where he held his hands out the window, and another officer who's fortunately fired, said, you're going to ride the white lightning, or you're going to ride the lightning and you ought to be afraid. You know, it's the conduct. And I don't want us to personalize it to be that person is the outlier. It's really the conduct is something that's not going to be an outlier. We got to be aware that's not tolerated at all.
Bob, thanks for the call. In our last minute or so, David, do you see structural changes tackling what Bob says is conduct more than just from Derek Chauvin?
It's a possibility, but I think this is really the politics of what's going on in this case here, is that if, again, as I said before, if it's viewed as simply one officer convicted of murder and manslaughter in one case, no, I don't see structural. But if the message that comes from this is that Derek Chauvin's behavior is paradigmatic of a broader set of behavior we see with police that need to be changed, then yes, this is now where we've walked beyond the law, and we're now looking at the politics. What is the political mobilization that occurs as a result of the verdict today? And that's what we're going to start to see, I think, start to unfold in the next few days.
We'll leave it there. Thanks to our caller. And David, thanks for joining us again.
I appreciate it. Thanks to the audience.
That's David Schultz, professor of political science and law at Hamline University and professor of law at the University of Minnesota, with us today to talk about the verdict in the trial of Derek Chauvin, the jury finding Chauvin guilty on all three charges in the death of George Floyd.